Hey, Nige.
Yes, Earlonne?
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season.
Oh, nice.
Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from our Radiotopia family.
Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture. It's out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th. Hey, Earlonne, you know I'm going to tune in because you know I love gossip.
I know.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds.
You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple.
This is Damien Lanane, former prisoner and illustrator of the book This Is Ear Hustle. The following episode of Ear Hustle contains language that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
Are you playing Candy Crush?
Yeah. Yes.
What level are you on?
89.
Oh, I love this game. I'm on like 83.
89.
Why is it so fun?
I don't know. I'm not a game person.
I'm
but
not
I'm a,
either.
I'm a, not a game person, but I'm addicted.
What? I can't figure it out. I don't play any other game, but I have to like get rid of it sometimes so
yeah,
I don't play.
I am so addicted.
But what do you think it is about Candy Crush?
I don't know. I don't know. I just started playing it and got it addicted because I don't have a job or anything, so I'm bored all the time. So.
Do you can you hear the music though when you play?
If with my headphones
on. Yeah, because I like the music too.
Yes.
It's so
when
soothing.
It says Sugar Rush and
yes.
Pasty and all that. Yes.
And
exactly.
Like, good job.
Exactly. Yes. I love it. Yes.
Spectacular.
Yes, I'm addicted.
That's
yes.
So funny.
I'm very addicted.
But yeah,
yes.
When it says Sugar Crush and the like the things get big. Oh, you just feel so good about yourself.
Yes, I love it. Yes, I do. Yeah.
Do you think actually when you play Candy Crush, you create a private space for
it takes
yourself?
Me, yes, exactly. It takes me away from here. Yes, it really, really does. Yes, it takes me away.
All aboard!
Delicious.
I get what she's talking about with this Candy Crush, Nige.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was solitaire, because when I was playing it, I could kind of tune everything else out. You know, it was my alone time, which is really hard to get in prison.
Oh, totally. And Earlonne, I have a theory about this.
Okay, lay it on me.
Okay, so just stick with me for a second, all right? So I think that you can call Candy Crush a kind of structure, even sort of a form of architecture. I see your look. Okay, let me go further with it.
Yeah, please, keep going.
Okay, so it's a space, right?
Right.
Yes, it's an imaginary space, but it's still a space. And that woman we just heard from, Dorita, she's creating this Candy Crush space so that she can feel alone and have some kind of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Starting to make a little sense?
No, I hear you.
Okay. And if you think about it, this is especially important. I mean, it's actually crucial in prison because prisons are designed so that you are never alone.
Well, shit, yeah, they always have to have some eyes on you all the fucking time. That's what prison architecture is all about, surveillance.
Yeah, exactly. But people need privacy. They need that teeny, tiny little bit of freedom that you can get when you feel that you're alone.
True.
So that's what we're exploring in this episode and in the next one, prison architecture, real and imagined. This week, finding privacy.
And Nige, for everyone that know you,
yes,
they're going to say she sounds a little bit under the weather.
I know. I have COVID.
What?
Yes. I thought I would get away without never having that thing. But no, I got COVID. And so we are back in our closets again.
You know what, though? You've absconded COVID for 2 years and some change. So
I thought I was going to outrun it.
Feel proud of that, you know?
And, I was proud. And then I got my comeuppance.
So, yes, we are in our closets, which sounds about right for an episode about privacy.
Yes. I'm Nigel Poor.
I'm Erline Woods. And this is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Hello.
Yes, okay.
To explore this idea of private spaces, we got to do a really exciting thing that kind of starts a new chapter for the show. We got to spend 3 days at a woman's prison.
Nigel, can I sing this song real quick?
Yes.
By C.C. Pendleton.
Well, lay it on me.
Finally, it's happened.
It happened to me. Oh, my God.
We got inside, finally.
Yes, yes, yes.
The California Institution for Women, or CIW as it's called for short, is about 45 minutes outside of Los Angeles.
Hello.
Your hustle, let's go.
All right. Hey.
We'll step right across the hallway right
here. We did have a chaperone.
Of course, CIW's version of Lieutenant Robinson.
I'm Lieutenant Newborg.
How are we doing?
His name was Lieutenant Newborg, the prison's public information officer.
We passed through this security station and then stepped out into this big open yard.
And my first impression was it kind of looked a little bit like a community college. You know what I mean? Like a lot of one-story buildings connected by pathways and kind of scrubby landscaping.
And Nige, it was hot, as you remember.
Oh, God, it was over 100 degrees. It was almost unbearable.
And as we walked through the yard, it was barren. It was desolate. Just a few women posted up at a picnic table, giving us shit, of course.
And it felt a little weird. I mean, walking around the space where we knew nobody so that we could ask women about privacy.
Right. But that's what we were there for. So we figured we'd start in the obvious place where people live, their cells.
So we stepped inside across the hall and then I kind of walked the layout of the land.
So we walk into the housing unit.
We stepped into this small common area, and extending out was this long hallway with doors on either side, probably about like 10 to 15 doors, and each of those was a cell housing two women.
And since there was no AC, there was these big, huge, like swamp fan type shits that was in the end of each hallway.
Is it possible to turn the fan off? Just for,
just looking at the cells, I don't know, Nige. It seems like women at CIW have more privacy than guys do at San Quentin. I mean, at San Quentin, it's all bars. You know, you can see right into every single cell.
Oh, I know. I know. And at CIW, every cell has a door of solid wood. And the only way to see in is through this little window that's about, I don't know, like 6 by 10 inches.
Right, right.
And as we passed by each cell, I really wanted to look through those windows. I mean, I was just so curious. It felt like a peeper.
Peeping Nigel.
And did you see what was keeping those doors from slamming shut?
Yeah, I noticed that.
Did it tell you we were indeed in a women's prison? I mean, they were using sanitary napkins wrapped over the top of the doors so they wouldn't slam shut.
Prison Ingenuity 101, door stoppers.
Exactly. So we just started walking down the hall to see if anyone would chit-chat with us.
Oh, sorry.
And normally, Erlon, if we were at San Quentin, we would just be shoving the mic in people's faces. But it was really different there. It was kind of like a little hesitant.
I mean, I understand that. We were technically foreigners, you know what I'm saying? And we were being escorted by a PIO, so everybody's like, who is that? Who is that? You know, and then we had microphones, you know what I'm saying? So they want to figure what that is. But as we was walking down that hall, this one woman had her door popped open. So we just kind of stuck our heads in there. It was like, hey, what up?
So we're doing this. Yeah, we do a podcast about life inside prison. Mm-hmm. And one of the episodes we're working on is about the architecture of prison. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, your room caught my attention. And I'm just curious, how do you feel about, what do you call this?
I call this my safe haven.
When, what makes it a safe haven for you?
Because it's things that I do to remind me of home. And this is, I shut out the prison world.
Can you tell us something?
This woman's name was Marissa, and Nige. She had really bunnerooed her cell.
Totally. She had handmade curtains and a matching dust ruffle. I think that's what you call that thing that you put under a mattress.
Right, right.
She had family photos all over the walls. And the way she had it decorated, it kind of reminded me of a college dorm, but like a freshman college dorm.
I can't live like I'm in prison with blank walls and windows you can't cover and toilets you can't cover and all them things. I make it like home.
So, you wanted to talk to us?
Yeah, I just wanted to see what you guys were about, or what was this? Yeah, I was nosy, just being nosy.
There were a couple women who actually wanted to talk to us.
There's always someone who likes having a mic in their face.
Hello, how are you? Can you identify who you are and how long you've been down?
Rachel Rodriguez, I've been down 1 year this time, okay. this term.
How many years in total?
26, like sporadically, like in half, you know, here and there, but okay. A total of 26.
So they call them
life rules installment plan, yeah.
That's exactly what they call it. I was trying to get the words.
Yeah, that's me, yeah.
All the time.
So can you tell me about where do you find privacy here?
Privacy? When your bunkie leaves for work and you're in there by yourself.
That's the only time?
That's the only time you have privacy. Or if you have a restroom that's in like an education that has a door. That's the only other place you have privacy. Other than that, it's a speak on your bunkie kind of terms, ask for privacy. Hey, can I get 10 minutes alone? Can I get 5 minutes alone to change, whatever, use the restroom? But and you work with your bunkie like most of the time with everything and everything because they're part of you. You are part of them, and they are part of you till you're gone. Basically.
And do you have a bunkie that you get along with?
Yeah, I have a bunkie. She doesn't talk that much. So, yeah, it's great. I have a good bunkie.
My name is Catherine Carnero Elam. I've been down in prison for 16 years. I had a 25-year sentence. Like many other women, we have a routine to create privacy, and that's that you do a tent. If I need to focus and my bunkie's got to be around, I'll put up like a sheet, fold a sheet, and you get it connected and you're blocking your face, my face.
So like you're enclosing yourself in your bunk?
Yes, not the whole thing. Some people do feel like they need to do the whole thing, but a lot of us, it's just how much, even if it's a big towel or towel, and then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm in my space.
And what kind of feeling comes over you when you do that?
Oh, gosh. A feeling releases stress. I can think better.
Yeah. During the day is the prison's time with me. My time with me is at night.
This is Alice. We've talked to her on the phone before. She was actually in one of our episodes last season.
And you could tell, even from those phone conversations, that she had an interesting perspective on things. And I was really curious to finally meet her.
Alice is in her 70s, and like a lot of older women at CLW, she gets a cell all to herself. So that means she's alone a lot.
Being bipolar helps a lot. I usually only require 3, 4, 5 hours. If I go to bed at 8, I'm up at 1. That's when I do everything. I think at night. I work at night. That's my space. The minute they lock that door at 8 o'clock, I'm in hog heaven. I know that door is not going to be opened again, unless I'm dead. And that means everything I do in there is uninterrupted. It allows me to do what I want to do.
What words would you use to describe your cell? Is it your home? Is it your studio? What is it?
I always kind of referred to it as the den. I call it the den because in my house that I had on the outside, I had a den where I had my desk and I had all my stuff. And so this is now my house. I just had to downsize. That's all.
So your den is currently in a large estate with a gated community.
Yes, indeedy.
When we had first met Alice, she was in a different part of the prison. But I was curious on what her cell actually looked like.
Oh man, so was I. So, Lieutenant Newborg asked her if it was okay if we went over to take a look.
And this is it, right?
This is her cell, correct? This is what she calls her den.
When we arrived, Alice wasn't there yet. And Earlonne, I have to say, it felt a little weird to kind of walk into her space like that.
But we were on a mission. So, of course, we took a peek.
This is bigger than the San Quentin cell, ain't it, Nigel? Yeah, I mean, you can move around. Yeah, you can definitely move around.
I was actually kind of relieved when Alice finally showed up.
Oh, this is Alice.
Hey, Alice.
I was wondering if you could give us a little tour of your den.
Oh, okay. This is my kitchen, you know, and I have my heater where I heat up my water and what have you anyway, and everything.
So Alice's cell was pretty tidy and organized, and also every inch was packed with stuff like toiletries and medications, and there was a notable amount of saltine crackers, Earlonne. Did you check that out? I mean, it was like a Costco amount.
Yeah, them crackers will fill you up in a pinch with some water, I can tell you that, though.
And like I said, down there are my, there's my office, there's my all my writing materials. These two are my artwork and art supplies and what have you.
Under the bunk bed, she had big plastic bins full of papers and stuff.
Yeah, the lower bunk was set up for sleeping, and the top bunk she was using like a standing desk, you know, to put more of her property on.
Yeah, exactly. And on the wall next to her mirror, she had these two small photos cut out from a magazine, you know, like a teenager would do.
Hey, can you tell me why you have Elvis and Steve Tyler next to each other?
I grew up being in love with Elvis, and I am extremely fond of Aerosmith. I was a dancer for many years. I love dancing. I was raised in a family who kept us isolated from the world. And in fact, Elvis was such a big no-no. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s or so that I discovered Aerosmith and their music. And usually what I do is, when I go walking at the rec yard, I put my music on, and I'm sure I make quite a picture because, boy, when I walk, I rock.
Wow. When we were talking earlier about private places, and you said this is like your den, when you're out walking around with your music on and you're just rocking out, does that feel private?
Yeah.
Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Because I miss the music and the dancing so much. And a lot of times I've been known to do it in here after hours. And I just hang on to the edge of the rail, and I guarantee you I can rock and roll from here to Sunday, especially if I'm listening to them, you know. For me, it's good exercise. You know, it gets everything pumping, and I just have such a good time.
Do you have a headset on, or are you listening out loud?
No, I have a headset.
We wish we could see that.
Yeah, several
things. Any chance you could do it for us?
Huh?
Any chance you could put a headset on? And
that would be funny.
It would be. So Alice has her headset on.
She's getting her groove on. Yeah, she's shaking a leg, as they say.
She ain't playing. She's listening to Addicted to Love.
Oh, I thought it was salsa.
I know. Go. Wow. Wish I could film this.
She ain't playing. She's listening to her high-techer and getting her swang on. She said, I just got to hold on to the bunk, but I'm good.
She got the step. That's the step.
It just looks
swing
dance.
Right? Swing
dance.
Earlon, this was really one of the most memorable kind of visions I take away with me from our trip. I mean, it was such a private moment to see somebody in their own reverie. You know, it was awkward and beautiful. I don't know. Seeing someone like that is kind of a gift.
I think we were seeing a moment of freedom, Nige.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, Alice.
Say, hold up, I'm in it now. Ain't no pulling me off this dance, and I'm in it. I gotta get it in.
Okay, Alice, sorry to interrupt you.
Looked like she forgot we was there, Nige.
Mm-hmm.
Great you. Dancing.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Been a real slice of heaven, I gotta tell you.
That was
so
nice to spend time together.
We're gonna take a quick break.
When we're back, the private spaces of San Quentin.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
I try to drown out the whole world. Either headphones or earplugs. I am a recluse.
Earlon, we are back on familiar ground here. San Quentin.
And this is artwork. And I definitely remember this guy.
I mean, of course you do. He's pretty memorable. Like Alice, he had his own cell. And I have to say, his private space is pretty much a reflection of his inner being. You know what I mean? Like, his inner psyche is projected onto those walls.
Pretty much.
I got like a hate corner and a love corner, you know? Well, the love corner is the picture of the people that write you. And I would put my affirmations up on the wall. You know, I would have places in the world that I wanted to visit. You know, I'd have real healthy stuff going on, you know. In the hate corner, I had a list of names, the people I wanted to take revenge on. I had different ideas on how to get back at them. I had pictures of things that I would use to get back at them. I used to get real specific. I used to be like, man, I hope her son come home late today. And lie and be telling her he did his homework and shit. He gonna disappoint the fuck out of her ass. I hope somebody steal her mail too and she don't get her insurance stuff, man. And fuck around in a fire hit, you know? Nobody hates you like a dude in jail. Then the list got too long. I had to knock motherfuckers off the list. You know, like, you lucky motherfucker. I'm gonna be busy. Be busy whooping his ass, you know what I'm saying? So, and see, you know, when I came to realize in the hate corner that everybody don't deserve to be hurt. You know, some people, you just scratch the car up or something. You ain't got to penalize everybody with a rock upside the head, you know what I mean? The love corner was like an escape, and the hate corner was motivation.
And
My name is Brandon Riddle Terrell.
And how long have you been in prison?
Just over 7 years.
And what do you look like?
I like to call myself a pretty boy biker.
I think that's a good description of him, a pretty boy biker. So, and how would you describe your cell?
My cell? If you were on a rock star tour bus and like the little barrack on a tour bus, I'd describe it like that.
But you make that makes it sound cozy.
No, if you've been on some of them buses, they're not cozy. They're actually triple bunk, some of them.
Okay, but how about design-wise? Describe to me design-wise.
Paint scheme is black and white. White walls, all the trim and lockers and everything's black with a lot of white accents. A lot of shelving and systematical kind of organization things, you know, to make the cell flow and function. And it has like a bike shop / tattoo shop feel to it, like the posters and pictures.
So is it a pretty boy biker cell?
Yeah, pretty boy biker cell. Obviously, we have the bars. It's the same size of a cell. But for me, it doesn't resemble a cell. I've done it just how I want it. And I took that away from the system. Like, the system put me in a cell. Well, I'm going to make this cell as comfortable as I can.
And I wonder what it would be like for someone to move into your cell.
They'd be juiced. Because I know when done-up cells are emptied or someone moves out of them, like, it's a rush to get in them.
So there's like a little, it's like grabbing.
It's like when somebody dies in New York, they try to get their apartment.
Yeah. Then the view, I mean, you can't forget up there in West Block on the fifth tier, you got the view of Mount Tamalpais. And,
oh, you do?
Yeah. I sit on my bunk and wake up to Mount Tam. 50 times a day, you see the ferries go by every morning. You see the kayakers out there. It's bittersweet because growing up in the area, you know, I'm very familiar with it. And in between the buildings at nighttime, you could see the 101 and the headlights going back and forth. And that used to be like a daily commute. My parents, you know, all my family, they all work here. So it's like so close, but yet so far away.
Do you think they ever drive by and you see them?
There's definitely been times I've been looking over there because my mom, she drives sometimes 3 or 4 times just on that little strip right there going back from Novato and Tiburon.
It seems like you really view your cell as like a home and like a comforting place. I mean, if you have to be here.
Absolutely. So end of the day and I come back to the cell, it's like, yeah, at least, I everything's organized. I can relax, get some food and not feel like I'm in a cell. And the reason why I like the analogy of the shop garage style is because it's not permanent. It's temporary. You go to the shop and then you go home. Yeah, it's my shop, it's my garage, because eventually I'm going to be home with the family.
It was, you know, one metal bunk, toilet and a sink. And back then, it was a light fixture in the middle of the roof where you screw the light bulb in. Little chain, and then at the bottom, it was a vent with a TV cable coming out of the vent. And that was it. I'm like, okay, I'm here now.
I bet some listeners may remember Al Watson. He spent 36 years in prison on death row. And on the row, everyone has their own cell, and they pretty much never leave it.
Yeah, I mean, you rarely see them outside unless they're being escorted to, say, like medical. And even then, Erlan, I mean, you know this protocol. You're supposed to stop when they walk by and not even look at them.
You can call it privacy, but really, it's isolation.
Is it loud on death row?
It's very quiet. You can hear individuals, televisions turning. You can hear individuals hitting keys on their typewriters. There's no noise, really. Everybody's into their own world. It's very quiet.
So there's like 740 worlds up there. Mm-hmm. Can you describe your world there?
A lot of loneliness, sadness. It became to the point where that just became routine. Okay, this is what it is. You know, a lot of cell time, cell studies, trying to find ways to spend my time. You know, a lot of radio, a lot of television, a lot of books, working out. That was pretty much it.
During Al's time, the guys on the row were pretty much just waiting.
My mindset, I'm thinking, okay, maybe be executed in a couple of years or so. And time started to move. Ordered some little stuff, TV, radio.
How did you start making that place your home?
It was never home. I existed there.
Then something really surprising happened for Al. He was actually resentenced, and he was moved down to the general population.
That first night, when I came out of the dining hall, I just happened to look up. It tripped me out. I forgot all about that type of stuff. I'm looking up while I'm walking, just admiring this. When I got back to the cell, I actually realized, man, I haven't seen the moon and the stars in a long, long time.
Tell us a little bit about the family visiting area.
It's like a little apartment. There's a little area to hang coats and stuff, kitchen, the little living room area where you can, you know, sit on the couch, watch TV.
So in this episode, we've mostly been talking about cells and how some people can find privacy there. But there's these other areas in the prison, too, where for a short period of time, you can feel a bit more free, like have some separation from prison life.
And one of those spaces is the family visiting cottage. It's a small building inside the prison where you can actually go spend a couple of uninterrupted days with your family.
And it's sort of prison and sort of not. It's this in-between space. And Erlon, I know you never had the opportunity to actually do one of these family visits.
Nah, I didn't qualify because I was a lifer. But our friend Tommy did, so we asked him to describe the place.
It's two bedrooms, one for the kids, one for the adults, and there's a little bathroom with a shower. So just going there makes you feel like you're not in prison, you know.
So what was it like for the first time to go there and have such a different space after you'd been in a prison for like at least 12 years, right?
It was a little much. For one, you're kind of like, you keep up a wall. You keep up a mask and an exterior to where you don't want people to get too close to you. And so when somebody's finally allowed to get close to somebody, it feels different. I don't want people getting too close to me. Even just hugging my wife for an extended period of time, you know, it produced a lot of anxiety. One moment in particular, she's asleep on my chest, watching TV. I'm watching TV. And I hear outside the door, you know, a motorcycle revving. And I hear cars, you know, from the COs. They have a parking lot right by there. So I'm hearing all these sounds that I'm not used to hearing, and my heart starts to beat very, very heavily, and it wakes my wife up. She's like, what's wrong?
Her heart beating woke her up?
Yeah. So I'm having like a panic attack, and I'm like, it just feels weird. I'm not used to this, you know? And her being so close to me was kind of uncomfortable. And I'm like, it just feels weird. I'm not used to this. Just hugging, just holding hands, and felt uncomfortable.
Like it was just too much closeness?
Yeah, well, at that time it was 12 years without any contact, any human contact. It's like, you know, it's cool, but for too long, now I'm getting uncomfortable. It also became to the point where when I would leave, I know that I have to come right back to this prison. And so those moments of openness and intimacy and understanding that you grow with your partner, your significant other, it's beautiful, but it became for me, like, I'm tired of going back, you know, where I have to close back off again. There started to be another wall that I was building there, even while I was in the visit with my wife.
Erlon, I want to play you something.
Okay.
What do you have in your pockets?
My ID and my work card and a pen.
That's it?
That's it.
When you were on a higher level, what did you carry in your pockets?
A sharpened pencil.
Did you like to draw or?
Nah.
You want to tell me why you're asking people about their pockets, not?
So mostly we've been talking about prison architecture and privacy, right? Right. You know, like in terms of cells and the family cottage and places where you can find some bit of privacy in prison. Right. But I actually think that pockets are a form of architecture too. They're personal architecture. Obviously, it's this very small space, but it's a space that affords you a little bit of privacy because you carry things in there that are just meant for you. And when I think about the pocket in terms of architecture, I think about how it gives you not just a sense of privacy, but a little bit of freedom, right? And that's really what we're talking about this episode, how privacy is a glimmer of freedom.
So we've been asking everyone this to tell us about what's in your pocket. What do you carry in your pocket?
My ID, lyrics to a song, and my mask.
I don't think I know this cat, Naj.
No, you don't. This is Tom, and he hasn't been at San Quentin for very long. But the other day, he came down to the media lab, and New York and I sat him down so we could talk to him.
What song?
Oh, I write music.
Oh, your own music.
Yeah, I write my own
song. I can't hear it in your pocket.
Are you? No.
Come on, let me hear it, man.
Do you sing?
Yeah, please. Are you serious?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want these lyrics, though.
We haven't heard them.
Look, it's an old song I wrote. So it goes, you just want my body. I just want your body. And I don't think I should read the rest of this.
Yeah, so
it was good.
You can go.
Just a little more. Just a squish more.
It just leads into me saying that we're just doing things. Can I say that? I'll let you check it out later, but it sounds crazy. I'm laughing as I'm doing it because I didn't expect you to ask me about something in my pocket. But
why you got it sticking out your pocket then?
It was just because it's there. It's just in my pocket.
Okay, so you have your mask, your ID, your lyrics.
And a pen.
And a pen. Yes. When you were at your most high-level prison, what would you have in your pocket?
I would just have my ID, but I didn't carry anything on me because I didn't want to lose anything because something happened. If you can't bring your radio, it's just like you're going to lose it. You'll break it if somebody's attacking you or, you know, you get put down and the cops come and search you, they might break it. So you just don't carry anything on you if you don't want to.
So that's a pretty big difference then. Like if you think about your clothes or your pocket as architecture.
Yes.
Like that is very different.
Yeah, like now I would carry more stuff. It just so happens this is all I had, but like generally you'll see guys like walking around with their lunch and folders worth of stuff. Sometimes I come down here with my guitar, but if I would have had it, I would have never brought it with me because I don't want to lose it.
Right. So now how do you think about what the service of your pocket?
Oh,
what does it mean to you now?
I could put a bunch of stuff in there that I might need, like pens, maybe some food, like snacks in my pocket, and I don't think much of it because I'm not worried about getting jumped on or, you know, participating in some kind of violence.
Would it be fair to say that the pocket with things in it is sort of a symbol of maybe a little more safety?
You know what? I never really thought about it like that until you started bringing it up. But I think more freedom, maybe even safety, because I feel like I'm not going to lose anything.
Okay, so remember my theory about pockets being this really tiny form of prison architecture?
Yep, I'm with you.
Well, our next episode, we are going to zoom way, way out.
We're going to talk about the big public spaces in prison. The yards, the hallways, the layout, all that shit. The whole prison.
But first, one more thing about CIW that we got to get in here before we go.
All right, well, my name is Ashley Karina Garcia. I'm just 20 years old. I've been here for almost a year already.
And can I ask you, do you have any pockets?
Pockets? I do not. They do not let us have pockets here. Well, because I guess they think it's like a safety thing. I guess they don't want to do the extra work of patting us down. Most of the time, I'm carrying a pen just in case. All right, so like.
Okay, it's just like outside of prison. Women never get as many pockets as men do. Never.
But you know prison got all kind of crazy rules about women and men, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
women get sugar candy, like Skittles and Nailators and all that, and men don't get none of that shit.
I don't even know why I'm going to ask, but which would you prefer, pockets or candy?
Candy. I can make them pockets with needle and thread, you know what I'm saying? I give me the candy.
Oh, yeah.
Do you carry anything private on your person? Like, do you have pockets that you keep things in, or?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
Well, I don't have any pockets.
Yeah, why don't women have pockets?
I don't, it's the clothes that they sell.
Yeah. So how does it make you feel that you can't carry things that you might need with you?
I never really even thought about it, because you get so used to it that it doesn't become like something that you really think about.
Yeah.
As long as I have my ID or whatever, and if I don't have a pocket, like, you know, excuse me, women have secret pockets. Well, you know, we put everything at the top and then there is there.
Oh man, this thing about secret pockets, Orlando, it just got me so excited. You know, thinking about the possibility of spending more time at the women's prison and also pondering what kinds of stories we're going to get out of
there. Oh, we're going to get some very different stories. I can guarantee that.
But I know we've got some things to work on, because listening to our interviews, I can hear how tentative our voices are. It's like we just haven't made that connection yet.
Really? I thought we was doing good, but I'll say baby steps, Nige, baby steps. We gonna get it. We gonna get there. Ear Hustle would like to thank Lieutenant Newborg, Associate Warden Lewis, Acting Warden Core,
Mr. Mum, the team at Poetic Justice, and everyone else who hosted us so generously at the California Institution for Women. This episode was produced by me, Nigel Poor.
And me, Erlon Woods, along with Amy Standin, Neroli Price, Rahsaan New York Thomas, and Bruce Wallace, with help from Tony Tafoya and Rashid Zinneman.
It was sound designed and engineered by Erlon Woods, with help from Fernando Arruda, and it features music by Antoine Williams, Rashid Zinneman, Bill Phillips, Fernando Arruda, and David Jossi. And Erlon, you snuck some of your own music in there too.
Amy Standin edits the show, Shebnam Sigmund is our managing producer, and Bruce Wallace is our executive producer.
Thanks to Warden Ron Broomfield, and as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
So this is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the Public Information Officer at San Quentin State Prison. For those of you out there, remember it's election time, so make sure you're registered and get out to vote. And otherwise, I will say that I approve this episode.
This episode was made possible by the Just Trust, working to amplify the voices, vision, and power of communities that are transforming the justice system.
Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter, The Lowdown.
This week, you can see some photos from our time at CIW and find out how to watch us live in conversation with Piper Kerman as part of San Francisco's One City, One Book, celebration of our book.
And everybody know Piper Kerman, Orange is the New Black, right?
And our friend.
So subscribe to The Lowdown at earhustlesq.com/newsletter.
And Erlon, you've been kind of busy, because this is not the only podcast where our listeners can catch you this week, is it?
Nope. I haven't gotten any sleep, Nige. It's been hard. The folks at the Wrongful Conviction podcast asked me to sit in their host seat this week.
Wrongful Conviction features one-on-one interviews with folks who have spent years in prison for crimes they did not commit.
Right. And Nige, guess what?
What?
This was their 300th episode. And I got to talk with this one cat named Karamai Cunley,
who, and I think he was like 18, he was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, plus like 12 life sentences for a crime he did not commit, had nothing to do with, which is sad. So.
You can find Wrongful Conviction wherever you get your podcast. We also have a link in our show notes. Good job, partner.
Indeed.
You sound great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we have one more very special thank you before we go.
That's right. This is to listener Melanie Kale, who donated to our latest fundraiser. She's back east in Brooklyn. And Earlonne, she has been listening since episode one.
Ooh, well, we done took up some of her time, huh?
Yes, we did. So we definitely owe her a big thanks.
That's what's up. And I love this part of her letter, Nige. One of the reasons she was interested in our show right off the bat was because of her favorite high school English teacher. Melody says he was this totally jacked dude that coached wrestling and loved poetry and short stories. Before teaching us, he taught poetry in prison. It always stuck with me. And I love that Nigel started by teaching art. Oh, that's what's up.
Thanks so much, Melanie.
Yeah, them English teachers are the shit.
Oh, they are.
Shiznit. Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Radiotopia is a collection of independent, listener-supported podcasts.
Some of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm. I'm Nigel Poor.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
Thanks
for listening.
I went like 6 years without a celly. The side effect was I started talking to myself and playing weird-ass games. I sit on the toilet way at the other side of the cell, be trying to spit a loogie all into the water. But this is after like 2 years of solitary confinement. Man, Wilson wasn't nothing. With Tom Hanks and Wilson on that Castaway, man, that shit wasn't nothing. I wish I had a ball to talk to.
Radiotopia.